harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down the key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking side of me, running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. If you don't love it, leave me. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you're running down my country, man. You're walking on the right beside me.
This is Paul Froman. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the universe of the... European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. I'm a person who makes notes about TV ads, usually TV ads, and consistently note the agenda, the hidden, well, it's not even very hidden agenda, the obvious agenda. And it's the anti-white agenda. It's the race-mixing agenda. Now, I used to teach communications, English literature, writing, and of course along the way, would do units on advertising. And the normal strategy of an ad, a TV ad, of course, would be to... move the product, right? Why would you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to produce and to buy advertising time, or perhaps in many cases millions or tens of millions, if not to move the product? You know, to at least inform people the name of your company or your product, and offer some good reason. for the person to check into it further or go out and buy it. I mean, this was only reasonable. And then that brings me to an ad, and I'll come back to the reasons for the ad in a minute. This is an ad for Humira, and that's a prescription medication that helps deal with Crohn's disease. That's K-R-O-H-N, Crohn's disease. And Crohn's disease is a disease that affects the bowels and leads to chronic diarrhea and at times the inability to predict when you have to go to the bathroom. And, you know, so you get the picture. All right. This is actually not really about Humira as a drug or about Crohn's disease. That's just the background. So here's the ad. This is a little script for the ad. There's a white man, middle-aged guy, and he talks about likes to enjoy life, but coming along quite often is his Crohn's disease, which interferes. Okay, and then the camera cuts to the rest of his family. He's married to a negress, and he has a needless to say, a mixed race, but quite obviously blackish daughter. And he comes back to the fact he wants to, he loves his family, wants to be able to spend quality time with them, and this Crohn's disease interferes, but Humira has made things better. Okay, so there's the script. So superficially, it might help achieve the goal, which is if Crohn's disease is messing up your life, Humira is a product that may bring you some relief, so you can have a better time with your family. Okay, not a bad approach. Well, why stick in this dissonant, off-putting mixed race couple? Well, there might be a reason to do that superficially. If, let's say, sales among mixed race couples for Humira are low, but I don't think that's the case. I don't think the use of prescription drugs would be particularly different by race or by marital setup. Mixed race couples are about 5% of the population. So I asked myself, is that where you have to target your ads to get that 5% to go out there and pop some Humira? No, I don't think so. Many people, I mean, the fact that they're not in a mixed race couple situation, probably don't approve of it. It's not their first choice. Many people who are wise would say it's not their first choice. It wouldn't be a choice at all. So this mixed race couple actually provides some, I would say, dissonance. It makes the viewer not exactly identify with them. There's something a little contradictory. Why do they do? Are these ads? And Humira is only just an example I'm giving you. Why are they so common? Because there's an agenda. They are not showing us the world that is. They're showing us the world they want to impose upon us. See this? Well, get used to it. In fact, the Jewish former president of France, who is supposedly a right-winger, Nicolas Sarkozy, once said, not so many years ago, I think it was back in 2012, that interracial mixing was the way of the future. And if Frenchmen didn't do it voluntarily, they might have to be forced to do it. This remark seemed to largely be passed over. To me, it was absolutely chilling. How would you force people in a mixed race relationships? Like, you can't get a marriage license if your partner isn't of another race. None of this was ever explained, but the very fact it would even be said that if Frenchmen wouldn't do it voluntarily, they'd have to be coerced, it is terrifying. And we see these ads so often. Now, there's an ad right now for Expedia. And there's this plump negress, and she's sitting in a bathtub, and I think she's plunking away on her iPhone or whatever. She's arranging a trip. And she's getting all the things organized, and all from her bathtub. Expedia is so easy to find you the best deal and all that. Meanwhile, the camera will then cut to the rest of her family. There's her ineffectual-looking white husband and her mixed-race daughter. And they're planning for a trip, if I recall the script correctly. the daughter is I think late, is still getting her stuff together and all that. The purpose of the ad, again, superficially, would be, excuse me, if you want to plan for a trip, use Expedia, the efficient way to do it. So the brains of the family is the mother in this case. The brains of the family is the negress. The ineffectual white husband, and I guess the offspring daughter, but the ineffectual white husband, I guess, is available for occasional sex and not much else. The brains of the family doing it all from sitting in a bathtub is this ever so clever negress. Again, I would say that with the demographic of our population, I wouldn't call this a particularly winning combination. It, as very often happens, runs down the white man as ineffectual, wimpy, plays up the importance of the non-white, and emphasizes a mixed-race situation. This is an agenda, a brain-softening, brain-tenderizing agenda that aims at us. Believe me, they do here. So, you know, I urge people to get on the website and complain about the ad and make it clear. This does not speak to me. In fact, it speaks offensively to me. It's preaching a subtext that I don't agree with. I might be quite open to being persuaded that Expedia might be a way to plan a trip. I'm not persuaded when you rub my face in a situation I find offensive. I think it's really important for us to speak up. The complaint not made influences no one. Well, I changed my schedule yesterday very considerably. I was off to a neighboring city, St. Catharines, with a number of people in my Canadian Association for Free Expression group to attend a protest early this morning. That was Monday morning, for a lady named Patricia Zammit. And we went down the night before just so that in case there was snow or anything else, we'd be, you know, fairly close to the court. We wouldn't have to contend with trying to make transportation arrangements and try to make it on time. Now, to be on time, so we had to be at the court somewhat before 9. Court starts at 9, and we wanted to have a protest. You might well ask, well, what are you protesting? Well, protesting the fact that this lady, Patricia Zammit, was ever charged. And she was charged back shortly after Boxing Day. There was an incident in a parking lot in St. Catharines, Ontario, which is about 10 miles from Niagara Falls, the border crossing. Anyway, this is the Niagara Outlet Mall, a series of stores. And Boxing Day, of course, is a big sale day, and I'm sure parking spaces were at a premium. So Patricia Zammit entered the parking lot, was looking around for parking space, saw one, and suddenly a China woman moved in and took her space, her place, and had not signaled. And that was what the issue was about. So Patricia Zammit got out of her car and had some choice words from the Chinese lady, including, they have directional signals in China, why don't you use them? Now she yelled at her, and she made a couple of vulgar gestures and so on. But, at worst, you might say, well, she shouldn't have lost her temper. She shouldn't be rude. But, you know, that's a matter of choice. What, is, in my opinion, is not a matter of choice is the fact that the police charged her. Yeah, the Niagara Region police are very politically correct. As soon as the China woman took about a 65-second video of the incident and put it up on the internet, of course, it, as they say, went viral, and the usual chattering heads on TV, or sorry, on radio, where no, it was a one day wonder. Oh, the racism. Oh, you know, the vulgarity. How terrible. Oh, you know, saying these things about this poor immigrant and the intolerance and the usual big song and dance. In a healthy society, this would have gone away. Yes, I guess the talking heads have the right to label it as such. What's really the problem, though, here in our society is that for the lamestream media, any criticism of immigrants is a problem. I'll explain why. It's a problem because they know that the polls show them they know that the majority of people are unhappy with the Canada's immigration policy. You know, a lot of Canada is simply does not go along with the agenda. the polls show Canadians consistently believe, number one, too many people are coming, and that those who are coming should fit in with our culture. We shouldn't have to change for them, they should change for us. And at the base of this little incident in the parking lot was the perception that Chinese are not very good drivers. I know, ooh, that's a stereotype. Well, hang on. Before you beat up on me with this accusation of a stereotype. A stereotype is not a bad thing. A stereotype is a generalization based on reality. Now, there's something about that term generalization. That means it is a way of organizing reality. On one level, I will say we have to take each person as an individual. Yes, there are some Chinese, I'm sure, who are not bad drivers. But many are not good drivers at all. Not all so generalization says, generally, this is the case. But there are exceptions. And a generalization isn't a prediction that says always the way. For instance, a generalization would be, in southern Ontario, it's cold and very often snowy in February. That's true. That's a stereotype. It's a generalization. And it is normally true, but not always. For instance, thank heavens, today, February the 3rd, it was not true. It was actually a balmy Monday morning, about 40 to 45 degrees, as we had our little protest. Not a bad thing at all. But anyway, so if I notice, and many people, Canadians notice this too, that your Chinese are not good drivers. Well, that's racist. No, it's not racist. It's a generalization based on reality, always allowing for the fact that not every person in that group is necessarily a bad driver. Anyway, that was what was going on. And of course, the talking heads had a lot of opportunity to vent their moral outrage at this poor woman who lost it. The incident, of course, should have ended there, but it didn't, because we live in an incredibly politically repressive society. So the police charged her, because you see, anti-immigrant expressions are very dangerous to the tyrants who rule our society. They know from the polls that people are not happy with what's being imposed on us. They're not happy with the planned, quick replacement of the European founding settler people majority of this country. This is a plan. It isn't accidental. It didn't just happen, like a snowstorm in a Canadian winter. This is an agenda. And they don't want the natives getting too restless before it becomes hopeless. And so that you have increasingly police state tactics used against any dissent. So here was this woman in court today for having gotten a bit angry and a bit mouthy at an immigrant who apparently, I don't know if the woman spoke English, but apparently I think she didn't seem to speak it very well. That brings up another thing. How should you be able to get a driver's license if you can't speak the language? Now, the smart aleck will say, well, regardless of your language, you can still drive a car. Yeah, you can still mechanically move a car across a parking lot. But if you can't speak the language, how can you read the road signs? Now, I've been to Japan, and a friend of mine said, well, why don't you rent a car and drive to this place or that place? And I said, you've got to be kidding. Not only is it left-hand drive, and I've never driven left-hand drive, but I can't read the road signs. There is the odd sign that's in English, but you can't count on that. So how am I going to go from point A to point B unless I memorize it? If I can't read the road signs and I don't speak the language. Clint Eastwood in one of the Dirty Harry movies had a great line, and it was this, a man's got to know his limitations. And I think that's a very valid observation. I know my limitations, and I would not do it. Well, then, why are foreigners allowed to do that here in Canada, where they can't even read the road signs? So it's a valid, there's something bubbling beneath the surface here. And here you finally had a Canadian woman who gave voice to what so many people are feeling. Well, she got me slapped down. And that was the reason for the Canadian Association for Free Expression's attendance at court today, a protest to support Patricia Zammit, to protest the charges. And our point was, the charges are political. She's being charged because she said the wrong thing. That's pure and simple. She said the wrong thing. I don't believe, not that I think it's the wrong thing. But that's political. It's not that she committed a crime. She didn't beat that woman. Her threat was a Mickey Mouse threat. There was nothing, no follow through to it. If it had been two white guys, let's say, who'd gotten into a similar dispute, fellow had failed to signal somebody else had taken this parking spot that a person believed was rightfully his in a crowded parking lot. Two white guys get out of a car, call each other a couple of choice names, maybe flip the finger at one another, or I should say flip the bird at one another. That'd be the end of the incident. The police would not charge them. She's being charged because it was an immigrant, and you're not supposed to criticize our replacement. That's what it comes right down to. Well, we were there to testify, in the sense of, by our presence, to say, this is wrong, and we protest, and we back her. She's not guilty. She's not guilty of anything other than perhaps being a little bit rude. Well, what happened? Well, this is typical Ontario court system, a sclerotic, a massive time waster, and I might add money waster all around, both for the Crown and for the poor defendants. This is called remand court. For this is what is called her first appearance. So that's the first time in court. She was charged a couple of days after Boxing Day, so near the end of December. This is the very beginning of January. So she was not actually in court herself. She had a lawyer. Of course, had to come down from Hamilton, Ontario. So that'd be time and transportation. But, with these people, they're on the clock. The case got called relatively quickly. Remand court is case after case after case, and the result is it's set over for another day. So-and-so appears. The judge says, well, what's the situation here? and the Crown, that's the prosecution, says well, we haven't provided the disclosure yet. Okay, the judge says, okay, back here in 2-3 weeks' time. Or the defense is asked, do you have a lawyer? No. Okay, well, you should probably get one. We remand it till this time in the near future. Now, nothing actually is accomplished. Everything is just put over. But people have had to make an appearance in court, perhaps take the time off work, maybe lose a job because of that. If they have a lawyer, if they've got a lawyer, the lawyer is being paid. But the lawyer doesn't make this appearance for nothing. He's on an hourly retainer. So when it came to Ms. Salmon's case, she had a lawyer, and the lawyer said that the Crown had provided, no, the Crown said they provided, I believe it was 41 pages of disclosure, but that there was still an audio tape that had to be picked up from the Crown's office. So the judge said, well, okay, we'll remand this until the 2nd of March, so 4 weeks down the line, at which point there'll be another hearing. I doubt that will go, I don't think that will be the trial. I might be wrong, but it might not be. That these cases can be remanded and remanded and remanded, all of which, of course, massively waste everybody's time. So that's where I was today, and, excuse me, it just gets worse and worse. here's a tweet that I just saw just before showtime. Gay ban lifted. There's a big rainbow flag, and there is a Boy Scout traditional, khaki uniform with some badges on, Scouts of America, waving a big rainbow flag. So the gay ban is lifted, and Boy Scouts bankruptcy is imminent, and sexual abuse scandals are on the horizon. And the person who tweeted this out said, the destruction of the Boy Scouts, is one of the most despicable things that's been done. It trained boys how to become men by teaching them real skills, morality, and life lessons. Another good institution is gone. The Boy Scouts for over 100 years taught good lessons to young boys. And now that organization has completely been taken over by political correctness. And yes, if they allowed homosexual scout leaders, I think a good many parents would not want to send their kids, their boys, there. And, not every homosexual is a pedophile, and none, of course, but I think a lot of people would just not be comfortable. Well, Canada's political establishment, especially the present government under the trust fund kid, has exerted a lot of money in foreign, spend time and effort, and spent a lot of money in foreign aid and so on. And our prime minister is now off to Africa, which in some ways is good. It keeps him out of Canada, and he may be able to cause less trouble at that where he is. But he's off to Africa, to Senegal and Ethiopia. God knows why. Well, we're shaking our little booty and hoping that we can line up some third world votes, because we would want one of those rotating seats on the Security Council, a 2-year term. We haven't been on the Security Council for over 20 years, and we'd like to be. I mean, the government would like to be. It's prestige among the globalists. Not that it gives you a huge amount of power, but yeah, it's prestigious. But why would you would want to be on a special committee of the Parliament of Fools, I don't know. But we're spending a lot of effort on that. Anyway, Gwyn Dyer is a retired business leader. He headed a major oil patch corporation. and is surprisingly sensible. And here is an article he wrote just three days ago for the National Post. In 2014, the Supreme Court of Canada issued a stunning decision with profound impact on the future development of our country. For more than a century, Aboriginal, not those are Indians, the Indian title had been limited to the immediate environs around their settlements. You know, in other words, what was recognized in their land. The court ruling vastly expanded it to tracts of land that were regularly otherwise, that were regularly used for hunting, fishing, or otherwise exploiting resources at the time of assertion of European sovereignty. In the case of British Columbia, that included nearly the entire province. And so not just the land around where their settlement was, which you might be able to say was their traditional land. So it was vastly expanded. Well, that has implications, as Gwyn Dyer is about to explain. As Gwyn Morgan is about to explain. The court then defined the rights conveyed. Aboriginal title means that governments and others seeking to use the land must obtain the consent of the Aboriginal title holders. But they don't have title to it. That's what the Supremo said. The lone exception allowed was, quote, when after consulting and attempting to accommodate, proceeding without consent is backed by a compelling and substantial objective. So it's, but you have to consult first and try to make an accommodation, and you can only override that if there's a compelling objective. Like maybe getting our oil to the sea via pipeline to market it? Having established this seemingly helpful exception, the court then added words that guarantee endless litigation. Quote, the level of consultation and accommodation required varies with the strength of the Aboriginal group's claim to the land. But how could that possibly be decided outside the courts? asks Gwyn Morgan. Nowhere have those words done more damage than the two major pipeline projects that were to carry Alberta's oil through British Columbia. In 2010, Enbridge, that's a major pipeline company, filed regulatory applications for the Northern Gateway pipeline to go to the Northern British Columbia port of Kitimat. After four arduous years of hearings, environmental reviews, and stakeholder consultations, the Conservative Harper project approved the Harper government approved the project. But in 2016, that approval was struck down after a court appeal by Aboriginal bands claimed insufficient consultation. Enbridge launched a new round of consultations, only to see Prime Minister Trudeau stymie the project by creating the Great Bear Rainforest Reserve. The lands, the bands behind the court appeal were pleased, but not the nine bands along the route, which lost employment and financial benefits, and which had made agreements with Enbridge. They filed a lawsuit claiming the Great Bear Rainforest prohibition against development on their traditional lands shouldn't have been implemented without their consent. After 6 years and multiple Aboriginal litigations, a pipeline that could have been built on stream today was dead. Yeah, but, and don't think these endless hearings, environmental reviews, and so on, litigations, often taken, from one level of court all the way up the line, massively enriching lawyers on both sides. Don't think that doesn't factor into the cost of gas at the gas pump. if in order to get the oil to market, it costs a lot, it costs and costs and costs, that's going to be reflected in the bottom line. This is just catastrophic for the Canadian economy. Now, you may say, well, what does this have to do with the UNC? Well, we're getting to that. Next came the Trans Mountain Pipeline Project, the lone remaining hope for beleaguered Alberta oil producers. Kinder Morgan, that's a big company, filed regulatory application in 2013 and then consulted with 130 Indigenous communities. The time, the absolute, to be quite plain about, the endless bullshit. Parliament could, under patriotic leadership with a national vision, declare the building of these pipelines a national priority and emergency. They will be built. Yes, if they go over Indian land, there should be some compensation, and if there are any, there should be a guarantee if there are any accidents or leakages, that the Indians or any other landowners would be compensated. But they will be built. They're in the national interest. But we don't have a government with a strong national vision. Back to Kinder Morgan. They filed this is back in 2013. This is 7 years later. It's still not built. Again, if I may digress, I often say to people that where there is a national will, we're able to do amazing things. After the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, our leadership, with some justification, feared that there could be an invasion of the West Coast. Now, practically speaking, it probably was a wildly exaggerated fear. The Japanese, for one thing, didn't have the landing equipment to go all the way across the Pacific. But anyway, the fear was, well, what if the transportation routes along the coast are taken out? What will we do? Well, we needed a road from Western Canada, the eastern side of the Rockies, up to Alaska. So that we built the Alaska Highway in 18 months from Edmonton to Alaska, over, in many cases, very bad territory. Ground using equipment that by today's standards are almost Stone Age. But there was a will and we found a way. That ought to be done today. Back to Kinder Morgan. 7 years. 7 years, and still no pipeline. Karen, head on the thought. The federal government approved the project in 2016 after conducting its own direct consultations with 117 Indigenous communities. In 2018, an appeal court struck down the approval, citing insufficient environmental review and First Nations consultation. So back for some more consultations and review. So it started in 2013, we're 2018, 5 years later, back to some more consultations. The project was reapproved in the middle of 2019, and yet another round of consultation. But First Nations have filed yet another appeal citing, you guess what, insufficient consultation. 6 years after the precipitous Supreme Court decision, Alberta oil continues to be sold gleefully to gleeful American buyers at huge captive market discounts. A Fraser Institute study found the discount amounted to $20.6 billion in 2015, in 18 alone, and the Canadian Association for Petroleum Producers estimates annual industry capital investment declined by $40 billion. These are fantastic losses to the Canadian economy. Fantastic. All because of a meddling court and the fact the political leadership has not been there to override them. There's been, then there's the human toll. Had those projects moved forward as planned, some 100,000 workers would still have jobs, and these would be high-paying jobs. This melodrama of endless litigation must not be allowed to continue. But what is the Trudeau government doing to improve the process of gaining Aboriginal consent? Absolutely nothing. In fact, it has compounded the problem by adopting UN DRIP. That's the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The UN DRIP requires, quote, free, prior, and informed consent regarding the legislative or administrative measures that may affect Indigenous peoples, including approval of any project affecting their lands or territories and other resources. This is so vague as to mean anything. it is so vague. And we signed this. So, free, prior, and informed consent regarding legislative or administrative measures that may affect Indigenous peoples. That may affect them. Do they get a veto of the whole country? Our Prime Minister seems to think the UN is the home of the wise and right. The credibility of that fairy tale was soundly demolished last December when the UN Committee on Racial Discrimination released a directive calling for three major Canadian infrastructure projects to be immediately shut down, including the Trans Mountain Pipeline and the coastal the Gas Link Pipeline. Well, this is what? Committee on Development? No, it's the Committee on Racial Discrimination. Why should we give a flying flip what they say? But we do, because we want to look good, because we want that vanity seat on the United States of the Security Council. The committee's directive came as an unwelcome surprise to the 20 First Nations who'd signed benefit agreements with Coastal, demonstrating the farcical thoroughness of UN work. The chairman, or they call it the chair, he probably was as stupid as a chair, of the committee, stated he didn't know most First Nations supported the project because, quote, the role of the committee does not involve investigative work. What? You don't investigate, but you issue orders and demands? This is a world of lunatics, and we shouldn't have anything to do with them. I'm sure none of this will deter the Prime Minister's ego-driven campaign for a seat on the UN Security Council. Besides making the already fraught Aboriginal consent issue even worse by adopting UNDRIP, he courted popularity with the UN's notoriously, many observers believe, his decision to send our troops on a high-risk and dysfunctional UN mission to Mali was another tactic to gain support for his Security Council membership. So, the ego rather than the national interest rules. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side. I'm going to take my musical break now. I'm going to play a bit of boom pa-pa music. I hope you like it. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. You're on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. what's happened to our music here? Stuck on that song, as good as it is, there's a lot more on the CD here. So let's see if we can encourage it to play.
Thank you. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me, back with you again tomorrow. Same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.